Scouting out of the blue corner. He gives you your football meat and potatoes style and is the undisputed king of detailed player analysis. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Steve the Scout.
Hey guys, this is Steve the Scout and Austin Smith. Welcome to the Pro Football Scouting Show, and today Austin and I are going to be giving you 11 defensive units that are poised to have big turnaround seasons in 2019. This show is brought to you by Pigskin Nut and Pigskin Nut Radio. It is the football news and now the radio, football radio that you've been missing. We give you all the coverage you need on every NFL team, every college football conference, fantasy, really a website that is going to give a complete source of information for anything and everything you want. Football, we have exciting stuff coming out that we'll be introducing in the next few weeks. And I'm here joined by Austin. Austin, you know, we've spent, you know, the latter part of the last few months talking about guys yet to play in the NFL, but now we're starting to transition into that time of year where NFL units and NFL teams. So you excited to get back to talking about the big leagues?
Oh yeah, you know, that's the draft is only half the fun for me. Now that these guys have got teams and are filling holes, it's fun to kind of see, okay, who put the puzzle together the best heading into 2019. So ready to get going on that.
Absolutely. So Austin and I, we basically had this, we had the idea together that, hey, we're going to come up with this list. And, we ended up with between us 11 different defensive units that we think will be better in 2019. So, we're going to go through all those today. But again, this is the Pro Football Scouting Show. So it's not just a countdown, but we definitely want to make sure that, you know, we're giving you guys, you know, a little bit more than that. So with that being said, Austin, I'm going to let you kick it off and tell us the first defensive unit that you think is going to have a better year in 2019.
You know what? We are going to start with the a rival to me and a rival to you, the Washington Redskins. And we're going to look at that front seven and how they got better this year. You know, it starts with a very, very underrated signing in free agency. And that's Matt Ioannidis. You know, this is a guy that was very productive for them last year, has a career year, not only as a run stuffer, which he'd been to that point in his career, but also as a pass rusher, really stepped up his effort with the pass rush. And, you know, at some point, I think people thought maybe he just priced himself out of coming back to Washington. You know, we see that happen all the time. Guys have kind of, not exactly noteworthy careers up until right before that contract is due. And then all of a sudden, boom, they explode and their team isn't willing to overpay for them because they know what the full product they've gotten over a 4 or 5 year time period is. And they're not willing to spend that much for basically a 1 year wonder. Well, you know, Ioannidis was kind of that. But yet he chose to return to Washington at a very modest price tag. And, you know, I thought when I saw him re-signing at that price on that 3-year deal, you know, I just, my first thing that come to my head was, you know, good for him and good for Washington. These are two sides that didn't get caught up in the make every penny or save every penny argument. They rewarded him fairly. He did not ask them to overspend. And as a result, they're getting a guy right back, you know, putting a guy right back into the exact same scheme, into the same hole that he's filled there now for quite a while. And the defensive chemistry stays together. From there, you know, what do? They go out, they take a quarterback with that first pick, but then Montez Sweat keeps dropping. And there, we've already heard talk that there were a number of scouts and front office people and maybe even coaches that didn't want the Redskins to draft Haskins at that 15th pick. They wanted Sweat. They could not believe that Sweat had fallen to that point. And yet, he, you know, they went the Haskins route, and then Sweat continued to slide. And now here he is, you know, a Washington Redskin. They move up, they get him, and just a steal in my assumption. You know, that I just honestly don't see how this guy doesn't turn into a darn good pass rusher at that size. I mean, we're talking about a guy who measures, you know, right around the, you know, the 6 foot six mark. I mean, I think 6 foot five and three quarters, 260 pounds, over nearly 36 inch long arms, 10 and a half inch hand span. You know, this is a pass rusher just in his build. And then you want to turn around and throw in a 4.4 140, faster than we've ever seen a defensive lineman run at the combine. You want to throw in, you know, 36-inch vertical jump, the 125-inch broad jump. You throw in the seven-second flat in the three-cone drill, you know, 4.29 in the 20-yard shuttle. All these numbers are just spectacular numbers for a defensive lineman. And he's still got his best football ahead of him. Now, people can be scared off by the heart condition. You know, he never failed a physical over it. They can be scared off over the fact that he probably didn't have more production in college. You know, if you would have saw the leap that he took from his last year's tape at Mississippi State compared to what he looked like in Mobile at the Senior Bowl with the coaching staff that really, you know, was working with him a lot one-on-one, getting him better with some of his techniques. Just that jump there tells me that this guy's got it in him to be a pass rusher. So I was extremely shocked that he fell. And now you're going to be putting him across Ryan Kerrigan. You're going to be putting him across from a guy who compliments, the two complement each other in every way. You've got Kerrigan, the big, powerful, technical pass rusher, versus Montez Sweat, a physical freak that is just going to be so much more athletic than the guys from across from him. I can't see how those two don't match up well together to make that, you know, pass rush just devastating off the edge. And I'm going to throw in a wild card here as well, because there's still a lot up in the air about Reuben Foster's career and where he's going to go from, you know, the countless, you know, problems off the field that he's had. But let me just say this. If he plays football, and more importantly, plays football to the caliber that he's capable of playing it, he's one of the top 6-7 inside linebackers in all of football. This is a darn talented football player who just doesn't have his head screwed on straight. And, you know, he's got his old teammate Landon Collins there now with him in Washington. You know, maybe the honor system, maybe the buddy system kind of works its way out in this situation. And Reuben Foster, you know, cleans up his act away from the field. And if that happens and he's on the football field doing what he's capable of doing, I mean, this front seven is going to be very, very good moving forward. I'm going to be interested to see, how this defense may very well carry Washington to an NFC East championship. And that's crazy when you look at the Dallas Cowboys coming back with everything they've got, the Philadelphia Eagles coming back with a healthy Carson Wentz, with, you know, all the additions that they've had. They had a really good draft as well. You're talking about two playoff teams that got better in the offseason. You're talking about a Giants team that had a ton of draft picks and put them to use, had three first-round picks alone, you know, that's going to take a step up and we're going to talk about it a little bit later. But this front seven for Washington has a chance to be special. A darn good and talented group that could be one of the best in football and could be the catalyst to get that team, like I say, not just to the playoffs, but could get them an NFC East championship.
You know, Austin, I'm with you on everything you said here. When you want to look at a front seven, it's hard to find one, especially now having Reuben Foster at middle linebacker. It's hard to find a defense that's more complete. You know, I look at San Francisco and Washington as two teams. You know, and San Francisco had Foster last, but these are still two teams that I think are going to take a massive leap in terms of the impact that their front seven makes. And adding Montez Sweat opposite side Ryan Kerrigan. You know, Ryan Kerrigan is a great technician. So to have him there, it's promising. And then, you know, to have Landon Collins, you know, the presence that he is in the secondary and all the different things that he can do. I agree with you, you know, and this entire division is really starting to become pretty heavy when you look at front sevens. Philadelphia Eagles, you know, they have a lot of weapons on that defensive line. So does Washington. You look at the leaps that Dallas made last year with their defense and their linebackers. You know, so it's really going to start to put the pressure on a team like the Giants to really be in a position where your defense is helping you compete. Something that they couldn't do last year. So the team that I'm going to go with as the first one that I want to talk about when I'm looking at teams that. You know, are going to make their defensive units are going to make a big jump next year. The one that actually comes to mind to me first is another NFC East team, not your Cowboys, not my Giants, but the Philadelphia Eagles and their secondary. Let's start out with what happened last year. Philadelphia Eagles, they had a lot of big time injuries last year. So let's run through them really quick. First of all, you know, in week three, they lost their safety, Rodney McLeod. And, you know, the reason that really hurt them is that he gave them a lot of versatility in terms of his range, his ability to cover sideline to sideline. And I always talk about, you know, there's a premium now on these players that, you know, can be a safety, but can also be, you know, your slot nickel corner as well. And Rodney McLeod is one of those guys. You know, when him and Malcolm Jenkins, who, you know, did stay healthy last year, weren't about the only guy in that secondary who did, you know, they really worked really well together. And combined with what they have on that defensive line, you know, they should, you know, having him, you know, as a loss really, really hurt them. Moving on from that, they lost Ronald Darby. I thought, you know, at the end of the previous season and the beginning of last season, I really, you know, looking at Ronald Darby's, you know, the opening night game, you know, they went against the Atlanta Falcons. And I remember watching that game and thinking, oh my God, this guy could be one of the best corners in the game, because I had watched him coming out of college and because I saw that leap the previous year. I really felt like Darby was going to turn into one of the elite cornerbacks in the NFL. Early in the season, you know, they lost him. They also lost another cornerback in Jalen Mills. He was injured in the game against Jacksonville, and you know, it hurt, and you know, it was a huge loss, and he was out for the rest of the season after that. Now you look at you know, another guy that they lost, Eli Boca. He was a guy that played at the University of Calgary, but you know, when he did get an opportunity, you know, he played well. So this team dealt with a lot of injuries last year. Now, Let's talk about a guy that the Philadelphia Eagles. That's all the players they lost last year. Let's talk about Avonte Maddox. Avonte Maddox coming out of Pitt. I thought he was going to be a very good value pick. Number one, he's a guy that, you know, had consistent tape in college. You know, one thing that you got to see from every single guy that plays in the secondary, I think, whether it's safety or corner, is you got to see explosive hips and the ability to redirect. He did that. And not only that, I thought his instincts were good. So he showed some good stuff last year. And you know, with these young cornerbacks that are aspiring, it's like each year you're getting a brand new talent on the team because you're getting the improved version of that player. I think they're going to see that with Avonte Maddox. Combined with getting Ronald Darby back and Rodney McLeod, you know, I think this Philadelphia Eagles secondary could go from very porous to one of, you know, perhaps maybe the elite in the NFL. So I feel good about this Eagles secondary, and that's why they're the first team I wanted to talk about in terms of defensive units that can have a big turnaround in 2019. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back, and then we'll have Austin talk about his second team, his second defensive unit that he thinks can have a big turnaround in 2019. We'll be back here on the Pro Football Scouting Show. And we are back. Austin, you know, talk to me. You know, what's the next team that you want to talk about as a defensive unit that could turn it around in 2019?
Well, you know, we're going to go over to the Cleveland Browns, and obviously Cleveland's been making waves throughout their roster with guys they've been bringing in, guys they drafted, you know, guys they've traded for. But I'm going to look at the Cleveland Brown linebacking core. And it's funny because this is a unit that's never truly gotten a ton of attention, although they've been pretty darn strong through the years. Now, the first move that everybody's going to remember is the fact that they cut Jamie Collins at the beginning of free agency, let him go, you know, took, you know, a little bit of a cap casualty situation, and you expect that to be, you know, a step backwards when you cut your leading tackler. But the truth is, I mean, the cut made sense for their roster, not just for financial, you know, reasons, but for the situation, like a guy like Grenard Avery. You know, this is a guy who came in last year as a fifth round pick. And, you know, all of a sudden he's adding a little pressure as an edge rusher on third downs. Then he's seeing the field more, and all of a sudden he's giving him a little bit on the defensive unit. And you kind of wondered, huh, is there a spot where we could maybe create a role for him as a linebacker to get a little bit more out of him? Well, if it was going to be there, it was going to be at an outside linebacker position. This is a team that's got Schobert and Kirksey. I mean, they've got them penciled in there as the Mike and Will. So let's get a guy like Avery, maybe some snaps at the strong side linebacker position. Well, they do that by getting rid of Collins. They get him out. They add a young, cheap player. They create cap space. You know, and all of a sudden there, now you've got a pretty darn solid starting three. Well, then what do they do in the draft? They turn around in the third round and they take Sione Takitaki. And let me just say this. For some people who viewed this as a reach, I'm with you. However, I love the fit. And that's what can make a reach make a lot of sense sometimes. Sometimes you just have a hole that one particular player fits. We talk about the Sam linebacker position and what Avery could bring to it on passing downs. Well, let me tell you what Takitaki can bring to it on rundowns. This is a big physical linebacker who plays probably was one of the better linebackers in this class as far as taking on contact and disengaging in a timely fashion. This guy is a violent striker when it comes to taking on a block. He has long arms, and he does a very, very good job of getting off of blocks. That's exactly what you want your strong side linebacker to do. I mean, I go back and I look at some of the things that really impressed me about him. You know, he had 32-inch long arms at the combine for a guy that's just over 6'1". That's a very good number. This was a strong guy, showed some underrated athleticism while he was at the combine. And you started to kind of get an idea that this is a guy that could be one of those players in the middle rounds that could actually earn a starting job in camp as and guys, I call the Sam linebacker position, it's a starting position. However, they're not on the field the majority of the snaps. They're on the field with the starters and the base package. And then when your nickel defenders come in, your nickel cornerbacks, your extra pass rushers or safeties, whatever you do on your sub packages, that's when a guy like Taki Taki comes off the field. So I look at what Avery offers as a pass rusher. I look what Taki Taki offers as a run stuffer. And I say to myself, man, they have really done a good job filling that strong side position next to Christian Kirksey and Joe Schobert. So I love that move. And then, you know, Mack Wilson, a linebacker out of Alabama that so many people had pegged to be a top 40 pick. I talked to guys that thought he could even slide in to the end of the first round. This was a guy that was expected to be a big impact player on a team for various concerns. Me personally, I didn't necessarily see the same level of instincts that we've seen from some of the other Alabama great linebackers, like a C.J. Mosley or a Reuben Foster or a Dante Hightower. You know, those guys instinctually really excelled during their time in college. Mack Wilson is more of a run and hit type of guy. This is a guy that, you know what, he may not see it as quick, but when he does, he closes and he makes contact as well as anybody in this draft class that just came out. So, you know, yes, there is the potential for a guy like this to be a starting linebacker, but there's also some bust potential, you know, for a guy, like I say, that maybe doesn't process the game at a quick enough level to translate to the NFL. In this particular situation, Cleveland's got him coming in most likely as a initial backup and a special teams ace. And for those who remember Mack Wilson's freshman year at Alabama, he laid some special teams hits that were absolutely insane. This is a guy that can have success on special teams, but he also offers you that core depth at the position that is so important. This is a guy who can play the Mike linebacker position as a backup or the Will linebacker position as a backup. And now suddenly you look at their linebacker position, they've got five guys that I don't think I'd feel uncomfortable with any of them being in a starting role. That is a really, really good situation to be in because injuries happen in football. Last year, Kirksey gets injured for a good portion of the season. He misses it. Schobert misses a few games. You know, these are two guys that have been on this roster for a while and produce 100 tackle seasons on pretty much a year-by-year basis. One of these guys goes down, you've got a Mack Wilson that can pop up. You know, like I said, with Taki Taki and Avery, both have elements to the Sam linebacker position that could be considered helpful. Avery can also help you as an edge rusher in the nickel situations. So you just look at this group of five and you say, you know, I'm comfortable with where they're at linebacker. I don't care if there's injuries. Now, by all means, if three guys go down early in the season, then yeah, they're in trouble, but that's any position unit on any roster. Multiple injuries make things worse. I'm talking about one injury. They are going to be able to cover it, whether it's the strong side linebacker position, the Mike linebacker position, the Will linebacker position. So they are set up for success at that position. Joe Schobert is a free agent after this year. They have not agreed to a contract extension there in Cleveland. Who knows? What if Mack Wilson comes out and really does have a strong rookie year and proves that, hey, guys, the instincts weren't necessarily great at Alabama, but I was still getting the feel for a starting position. You know, what if those instincts get better? Now, all of a sudden, maybe you let Schobert walk. Maybe Mack Wilson slides into that role. And now you've got a fifth round salary as opposed to a guy like Schobert, who's probably going to command somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million a year. You know, they have set themselves up for success right away there at Cleveland at the linebacker position. And, you know, I know they've done a lot that's exciting there. And this probably isn't necessarily the sexy pick when you look at that roster and see where they've improved. But make no mistake, this team's linebackers are going to be strong next year.
All right. You heard it from Austin there. So, you know, I see it there. I thought Mack Wilson, you know, there was definitely a big jump off between Mack Wilson and Devin Bush and Devin White. And there are some other good middle linebackers that, you know, I guess, you know, I don't feel it got really talked about enough. But it really was Devin White, Devin Bush, everyone else. But Mack Wilson has a lot of qualities about him that can come in and help them right away. So, all right, Austin, I am going to bring this one home. I'm going to stay in the NFC East. I'm going to stay with the position group of secondary as the first team I discussed that would make a big turnaround in 2019 in terms of defensive units, because that's what we're talking about here, was the Eagles secondary. Staying in the NFC East but going home to my New York Giants, I also think the New York Giants secondary, like the Eagles, is poised to be a lot better in 2019. First of all, the Giants, what I'm seeing is that they're starting to develop an identity on defense, because they have three physical players back there in the secondary, and none of these guys saw the field last year, and I think these are all guys that can come in and make a big impact right away. First of all, you look at Sam Beal, the Giant Sam Beal out of Western Michigan. I really thought that going back and watching the tape, this is a guy that could be a first round draft pick in a lot of other draft years. For academic reasons, he ended up in the supplemental draft. But when you want to talk about a guy who's ready to come in right away, he's physical. He mirrors receivers very well, and he has a straight line speed to stay with top end receivers. And he's just competitive. He's just competitive when the ball's coming his way. And a lot of those same attributes that I'm talking about, I see in DeAndre Baker, a tough, gritty, physical corner who maybe as much as any quarterback in this draft is a guy that can do all the different things. You know, you can fit him in any scheme. So I think you're getting two new cornerbacks, essentially. Beal didn't play last year because he was injured. But I think, you know, when you just combine those two, they're going to get a lot better. And who does that help? That helps Janoris Jenkins quite a bit. You know, and Janoris Jenkins last year, he had some injury issues. You know, his first of all, his ankle was bothering him most of the season, and then he really got hurt, and that was it for him. But you know, I think he's gonna come back, and you know, he's gonna be a player. So we're talking about a team that's gonna have three cornerbacks in the field that could play at a very high level that were not on the field, you know, not in the field last year. The Giants fans are upset because they lost Landon Collins, but let me tell you something. I think people need to understand, and you know, I think people sometimes just forget this, is there are just some guys, and we talk about them every single year, where they need some time for some consistent coaching, because the upside is huge. But they just need they need someone who's going to help them and discipline them to help them become the player that they want. And I think people are really overlooking what Jabril Peppers can bring to the Giants defense this year. Again, I talked about defensive identity. Same as those guys. He's a guy that plays with a lot of versatility. talked about it, you know, I talk about it all the time. I mentioned it probably a few minutes ago, I think. You know, these guys that can come in, they can be a safety. And what I mean be a safety is that they can do all the things that you want a safety to do, but they also can take on some of those linebacker responsibilities, and they can even switch into a third corner. And, you know, Jabril Peppers can do a lot of that, and he's a guy that brings a lot of versatility there. He is also a big play disruptor. You know, if he sees an opening in a gap, he is really really quick to fill that gap, and not just fill that gap, but you know, really really impact a play and even cause a tackle for loss. When you look at, you know, some of the things he does well, he just, you know, when you ask him to athletically deal with the wide receiver and just use his athleticism, he wins. Now, in terms of what he needed to kind of develop on is, you know, it's really he just needed time and effort into dedicating to one position. They haven't played. I think the way the Giants are going to use him this year is going to play to his, strengths. So they have three guys there that are versatile. You have Janoris Jenkins, you know, coming back. So I really think, you know, when you look at the New York Giants secondary, this is a secondary that I think is going to be a lot better in 2019, Austin. And that's why I have them as the second position group on my list.
Yeah, you know, the New York Giants secondary is the only one that you and I agreed on this list. Otherwise, it would have been 12 instead of 11.
But, there's one more. There's one more, and I'm going to spoil it now. I think we did agree on San Francisco,
Well, you know what? You're exactly right. We did,
but hey, I'm sorry. You get Dee Ford and Nick Bosa. You know, you're going to be better.
Yeah, I'll say this much. The New York Giants, you know, what an underrated move to bring in Antoine Bethea. You know, you got a lot of young guys there. Sam Beal, Jabril Peppers. Obviously, you bring in a DeAndre Baker, a Julian Love, a Corey Ballantyne. Those are
three. Yeah, and you know, Austin, I didn't even touch on those guys. But, you know, and to be honest, I probably would have been here for another 10 minutes, but Julian Love, I think can end up being maybe the best pick of the whole draft for them in terms of the player they get and where they picked him. So,
absolutely. You know, those are three talented corners that a lot of people liked in this draft. Even Corey Ballantyne, go back to the Senior Bowl. This guy showed that he can have success, you know, not only on the outside, but in the nickel as well. So they got three really talented corners that, you know, in the draft, a young secondary. And like I say, I love bringing Bethea in because it's a veteran. It's a leader. You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I want Janoris Jenkins being the leader of that defensive unit. I'd say nothing personal, but it's, you know, Janoris Jenkins hasn't been the most reliable character, you know, throughout his you know, history in the league and even in New York. So, you know, I love the idea of bringing a positive role model in to kind of take that place that Landon Collins left open, you know, to be able to show these guys the right way to go about their business, the right way, you know, to conduct themselves as professionals. You know, it's just a very underrated move. I thought so. I was with you on that secondary. My third position is going to be Oakland's defensive ends. And this is purely draft related. And you know, let me go out on the record now, because, you know, with a lot of the people that I talk draft with or that listen to me talk draft, they just think that I don't think Cleland Furrell can play at all. And that is absolutely and utterly not the case. Cleland Furrell was one of my top 20 players in this draft. And to be precise on it, where are you at, sir? Actually, I'm going to beg your pardon. Top 30 players in this draft. I had him as my 29th best prospect. So obviously, I thought the guy could do some really special things in this league to have him, you know, as a possible first round candidate. Now, did I see him being the fourth best player in this draft? No. Do I think Oakland absolutely wasted an opportunity to get a truly premier talent at number four overall? Yes, I do. Ed Oliver, the three technique in that scheme that they're running there is extremely, it's extremely important to have a playmaker there. Ed Oliver, I thought, was one of the top three players in the draft. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean I don't think Cleveland Farrell will be a good professional. I think he's going to be a very good professional, and I think he offers you a player that can win not only with his size, because guys, when you look at Farrell, the first thing you notice is this is a big, long guy. He is a tall player. He has long arms. He uses those long arms to his advantage. He uses pretty solid technique. You watch that battle with Jonah Williams in the national championship game. Williams got him on a lot of plays. He got the best of Williams a number of times, too. As the game went on, he only got better. And I get that Clemson had a lot of the momentum there in the second half, and that's, you know, that works well for the defensive player in that situation. But the bottom line is this, you know, this is a guy that's going to have success in the NFL. And what Oakland said about him and his character and that being just as important to them making the decision, taking it for, I'm not arguing any of that. This guy's an outstanding human being. This guy is a guy that could be a generational presence in a locker room. You know, and when I say that, I look at guys like Jason Witten here with the Dallas Cowboys or DeMarcus Ware. When I say that, I'm talking about a guy like Eli Manning is in New York. I'm talking about a guy like Larry Fitzgerald is in Arizona. I'm talking about guys that, you know what, regardless of how good or bad they are as a player, regardless, I mean, the guys I'm mentioning, yeah, they're Hall of Fame guys. However, I'm talking about just the type of person they are. Ferrell has that ability to be a leader for a team for 8, 10, 12 years in this league. You need that when you completely tear a team down the way that Oakland did last year. So I liked that move. I just did not like the value of it. However, Ferrell's going to be a good player in the NFL. The pick that I think really sets this group apart from some of the other units that I debated on putting on this list is the Max Crosby pick. Because with that pick, you get a guy with incredible upside. This guy has the kind of first step quickness and athleticism that not a ton of these guys in the draft possessed. Ferrell does not possess it. Max Crosby is a special athlete. You look at what he did when he was at the combine. He goes out and runs a 4.66. You know, he puts together a sub 7 second three cone drill, gets close to running a 4.00. I think his time is a 4.13 in the 20 yard shuttle. Guys, those are incredible athletic numbers. That means that this guy is fast, he is quick, and he can change direction. Now, coming out of Eastern Michigan, yes, there's a lot of work to be done with his technique, and there's a lot of work to be done with the way he processes the game and the way he goes about, you know, preparing on a snap-by-snap basis. You know, when understanding what your assignment is and understanding the best technique in order to make that, to accomplish that. You know, those are things that they're going to have to be patient with him with. However, you know, you've got a guy in Arden Key there who was the guy a lot of players were excited about last year. It'll be his second year. He's added weight in the offseason program. They're going to be expecting him to possibly play a bigger role across from Ferrell as a starter. And then you've got a guy like Crosby that you can be patient with. You can put him in situations that you feel comfortable with him having success in, that you know that he can handle. And guess what? You don't spoil the player's confidence. In fact, you build it up. because this guy in his limited reps is having success. So I loved what they did with the defensive end position. They got a young trio there that have got a ton of upside. They were all very talented prospects coming out in their drafts. And, you know, I know a lot of people give John Gruden and Mike Mayock a lot of crap for some of the decisions that that they've made, obviously with Gruden, not just in the draft, but obviously throughout the last year that he's been a part of that organization, you know. But this defensive end position got a lot better in this draft. And, you know, and you're actually going to hear me talk about Oakland again here in a little bit as well. But for right now, the defensive ends are the group I'm talking about.
All right. And look, I got to say this, Austin, you know, talking about the Raiders and talking about Cleveland Farrell, I went back and watched a little more of his tape, you know, after the draft. I watched a bit before, but I watched more after it, and I actually went back and I looked at that game against Alabama where he went against Jonah Williams. And I remember a play where he literally manhandled him at the point of attack and drove him a good number of yards back into the lap of the quarterback just by himself. And not only that, he used very good technique. And the Raiders talk about so that was something that really impressed me when I saw that. And you know, Mike Mayock and John Gruden, you know, that they talked about the concept of building blocks. And you know, that's one thing that, you know, fans, you know, they seem to often overlook when their team is drafting a player is what impact is this guy going to have in a locker room? Imagine if Odell Beckham's attitude was always that of Eli Manning. You know, they had the same personality. He'd probably still be in New York right now. So look, you know, you can't, you know, and a good attitude, and from what I've seen from Cleveland Farrell, watching the interviews, and I've watched a few of them, and reading what I've read, and not only that, seeing him go against good competition and succeed, and being a guy that, you know, has a lot of length, but knows how to use that length. You know, the more I saw it, his success was, I think there might be some people that said, well, there's a lot of other good players on that Clemson defensive line. And, you know, I think, you know, you go back to the Alabama game, there's a couple other games as well, and you see that when he goes against good college players and he wins. And you're right. I mean, they need, you know, if he's the guy that when you're tearing down an organization can be part of a locker room, rebuilding of that, you know, from what I can see, he's a guy that can really help with that. So we're gonna take another commercial break. I'm gonna come right back and give you the next position group, next defensive position group that I think could turn it around in 2019. We'll be right back. All right, we're back on the Pro Football Scouting Show. This is Steve the Scout and Austin Smith. We're continuing discussing the defensive units that we think will have the biggest turnaround in 2019. The two defensive units that I discussed first were the secondaries of the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think when you look at the Green Bay Packers, they're the next team I'm going to mention. They are a team that didn't have much of a pass rush last year, and they added three guys that can impact the game. And you know, the three guys that I want to talk about that they added Rashawn Gary in the first round. You know, he's going to be playing next to Mike Daniels, so that's going to give that defensive line a lot more of a push. But when you really look at what they've added in terms of edge rushers, Rashawn Gary, I think his best fit will be to slide inside of the next level. But he's known as an edge rusher. But you look at who they added. They added Preston Smith and they added Za'Darius Smith. So between Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, and Rashawn Gary, what you're going to have, Austin, is you're going to have three guys that even if they don't get home, because these guys don't necessarily have they're not known for the double digit sack production, but what all three of these guys are known for is causing pressure. And let's start out with Preston Smith. Preston Smith came over from the Washington Redskins, and in 2017, Preston Smith generated more pressure. He generated more QB pressures in terms of his percentage, you know, when he was on the field. And I'm just talking about how many snaps he played to how many pressures he actually had. There's nobody that had a better percentage of that than Preston Smith in 2017. And let's remind you of some of the guys that played in the league in 2017. Von Miller, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald. So I'm telling you, you can't argue that. And I think it was about, 16 or 17% of the time is when he had a QB pressure. So even if he's not getting home, he's causing havoc. And Preston Smith is one of the guys that I looked at the scouting academy. What they do is, in their program for each position group, they give you five guys to send reports on. Preston Smith was someone that I did some work on that I said, man, he's not getting home, but this guy really is an impact player. And the same thing can be said for Za'Darius Smith. Za'Darius Smith, a guy that I thought was the most improved player on the entire Baltimore Ravens team, last season. Because when you turn on Ravens tape last year, we all know who Terrell Suggs is, and he's been somewhat of an ageless wonder, still playing well into his later years. But you look at who's the guy that just, oh my God, that guy is just nasty and violent and a load to deal with. And that's Za'Darius Smith. I mean, that guy plays angry. The biggest criticism on him that we saw coming out of college, or at least the criticism that I had. I don't know if other people had it. I don't know, but I just felt like he wasn't a very good bender. And he didn't have, he didn't necessarily have the straight line speed, that you looked for. He's a guy that he gives you everything he has in every single play, and he's become a much better technician over time. Rashawn Gary is another guy that they drafted in the first round this year, who just like those two, even if he's not getting home, he is causing a big impact on the game. And let's not overlook the impact that, although he's not in this position group, that Mike Daniels will make on a football game. The Green Bay Packers defensive tackle, putting him next to Rashawn Gary, having these two outside linebackers, that they've added. I think the Packers pass rush, their pass rush is going to be better in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And I considered them, in my group. And like you say, both the Smith boys and Gary, those three. And as I, you and I talked before, some of the best things guys like Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith could do, and some of the other players like Clark and Daniels inside. Those guys play well, and they get the ability to not only be patient with Rashawn Gary, but kind of find a role for him. Because this is a guy that, we debated throughout leading up to the draft. I mean, multiple times you and I debated, what's his best position? Is it end? Is it as a three technique? Is it as a five technique? It could even stand up as an outside linebacker. There's a lot of potential there, and the guy is just a physical freak. We just got to, he's got to be coached up. And, all those guys you mentioned, those guys give them the ability to do that without, him having to play a meaningful role, in the starting group, and possibly seeing his confidence be affected on poor production. So, with that, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, you're not kidding. Those guys come in and play well, and obviously, they're going to start off Gary on the inside, but who knows? Maybe they see something in training camp, and back out he goes, And now they've got an opportunity, like I say, to kind of, you know, pick and choose when they want to put him into the game. And so that's a really good upgrade for them on the edge rushing position. You know, we're going to go back to Oakland for my fourth team. I've already talked about Oakland once with the defensive ends. Also talked about the Cleveland linebackers and Washington's front seven. We're going to stick with Oakland's defensive backs. You know, this is a group that added a lot this offseason. And I'm just going to start with adding the veteran LaMarcus Joyner from the Los Angeles Rams. And look, we talk about defensive backs that could do it all. Earlier when you were talking about Jabril Peppers for the New York Giants and how many different roles he can play there, that's what LaMarcus Joyner brings to the table. This is a guy that during his time at Florida State, he was considered a corner, and then it was a safety, and then it was back. And, you know, he came into the NFL with that label as a guy that, hey, he can play throughout your secondary. He can come up into the box. He can stay back in the deep, in the single high look. He can play in the nickel. You know, you can match him up on certain, you know, styles of receiver or running backs even, and he can have success. So they bring a veteran like that in, a kind of do-it-all guy to a secondary that, let's be frank, you know, is continuing to get a makeover. I mean, we still don't know if Carl Joseph is going to be in Oakland much longer. You know, obviously Gruden has done a good job of getting a lot of the guys out from the prior staff. You know, he's gotten a lot of those guys out. Carl Joseph is one of those guys. We thought that he might have been traded at some point in the season. Who knows if he's got a future in Oakland? But you know that, you know, bringing in Joyner means, hey, you know what? You've at least got one of the two safety positions sewed up. Now you move on to the draft and you look at some of the things they did. And we start with the first round pick. They go get a hard hitting safety like Jonathan Abram. This is an in the box guy that can absolutely bring the pain. I mean, he finishes when he gets there. He leaves guys remembering his name. And that kind of presence on this team is going to be something, you know, that kind of intensity is going to be enthusiastic for a group that's going to be a lot of new faces playing together. I mean, Oakland, let's be honest, their roster has pretty much been completely turned over. And so a lot of new faces. They're going to need leaders in that group. And more importantly than just vocal leaders, which we've talked about a guy like Cleland Furl and what he'll add as a leader in a leadership role. But Abram's a guy that can lead by his example. He can go out there with that intensity and with that fire on a snap-by-snap basis and show guys, hey, this is the way we're going to play on football. And, you know, you talk about a guy playing with his hair on fire, going 100 miles an hour to the ball. That's what this guy does. And that is what this defense wants to do. So I'm not saying Abram is necessarily going to go out there and be a rah-rah leader, but he's going to be a guy that you go out there and you watch him and you say, yeah, if I'm not giving that kind of effort, then I'm not doing this defense any justice. You know, I can be replaced. So that's where I think Abram stands as far as his ability to be an impact player in that secondary. And then you look at the corners. They take Trayvon Mullen in the second round. Long, tall corner, good athlete, a guy obviously that kind of had a bit of a coming out party in that national championship game with those interceptions. This is a guy that they coveted early in the second round to come in and be a significant impact player in that secondary, and I think they're going to like what they get. And then in the fourth round, and Isaiah Johnson, maybe I was bigger on him than a lot of other people. I personally thought Johnson would be more of a day two pick. He slid into day four. Oakland got him there a little bit on the later side. I'm sorry, day four, round four. Oakland got him a little bit later in round four. And all of a sudden, you're like, wow, three talented rookies, you know, that you bring into this system with a first round pick in Gerrion Conley, with a first round pick in Carl Joseph if he sticks around, with a veteran like LaMarcus Joyner, who's got tons of position flex. He can play in the nickel, or he can be a strong safety, or he can be a single high safety. You've suddenly got a lot of faces in that room that can be an impact player in that secondary. So, you know, and you look at Johnson and Mullen, the two of them bring the same things. They are tall, long corners that can be very disruptive at the line of scrimmage. So that's, you know, you kind of see the Oakland Raiders show a little bit of an identity of what they want in their corners. I don't think Conley necessarily fits that, but he's also an extremely talented football player, and he does have the ability to slide into the nickel position and contribute there as well. So overall, you know, I see a ton of new faces in that secondary. Once again, this was a unit that got, you know, just absolutely, and really every position unit in Oakland went through a makeover last season and continued to go through a makeover this offseason. This is one, like the defensive end position that I talked about earlier, that I think is going to pay immediate dividends. I think we're going to see, you know, this secondary take a step forward. We're going to see a lot of talent, and I think Oakland's really going to be happy about the players they've got in that secondary moving forward.
Yeah, I love the Jonathan Abram pick, you know, again, you know, we talk about them going after building blocks. Jonathan Abram, you know, that's another building block, you know, that they have there. You know, they're trying to create an identity there, and they want that identity to be based on physical football players, high character. That is what the Oakland Raiders are trying to be now. So, the next team, Austin, that I'm going to talk about that I think is going to be better in 2019. And I'm going to take a sip of water so I can talk about these young edge rushers. Oh man, that was wonderful. Okay, so Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter. First of all, why was the Vikings defense, why did it underachieve in terms of their pass rush last year? And I think a big reason was that Everson Griffin, you got to give these some merit because they are voted on by the players. So I do give these lists some merit in terms of how well they played last year, but they're not scouts, but they do play in the NFL. And, you know, I think Danielle Hunter was ranked the 18th best player in the NFL in 2017. I understand this is the Pro Football Scouting Show. It's about what we scout, but you're not going to be ranked that high on the list by the next players if you're not doing some stuff that's very impressive. Everson Griffin, he's dealing with a lot of personal demons, or at least last year he was. So there was reports that essentially, you know, his wife said that often he'd wake up in the middle of the night, he'd have these demons, and he just basically was having a lot of mental health issues, and you know, he needed to get professional help. And look, if we've ever been in that position, or we know someone that's been really affected by demons or things you're dealing in your head, sometimes they can get pretty bad. And it doesn't matter how talented you are, or how good of a football player you are, it's gonna make it tough. And it's, from what I've read, it sounds like he's dealing with a lot of that stuff. And look, when this guy comes back on the field, he's tough to deal with. What I think that Everson Griffin does about as well as anyone is playing with leverage and playing with strength and power at the point of attack. He converts speed to power. He's one of those guys that you lock horns with him, he's going to jolt you. So having him back, but also having him back mentally healthy this year, I think is going to help a lot. Anthony Barr, although Anthony Barr has not had the production There's a reason why he was a big name free agent. Despite not having the production, he does make a lot of splash plays, and he's also been a very good run defender and just someone that consistently impacts the plays. I think when you look at Anthony Barr, you know, this might be his year to start getting double digit sacks. But look, it's also about what he's been asked to do. And when you look at what the Vikings have asked Anthony Barr to do, he's done it very well. Look, there's a reason that he was highly sought after despite not having a lot of production. When you look at assignment football, he does pretty good. What really, and the reason I think, you know, Anthony Barr, you know, and he's still ascending as a football player, because although he went in the first round, you know, he wasn't as polished as a Nick Bosa or a Josh Allen or even a Zach Allen. So look, this guy has tremendous upside. He's become a better football player. And Danielle Hunter, I mean, what can I say? I mean, this guy is an absolute freak. This is what happens when upside actually comes true. He was drafted. He was drafted round 3, pick 24 a few years back. Last year he was one of the best pass rushers in the league. The guy just has a freakish combination of size, athleticism, explosiveness, and again, you know, like Everson Griffin, he's got real power in his hands, and he's also someone that's become a better technician of the two Vikings, you know, defensive ends. He's probably the more natural freakish athlete. But when you look at what they have there, if they're going to have Anthony Barr still ascending, they're going to have Danielle Hunter coming back and continuing to do the stuff that he did last year, and even the year before he was dominant. So it's not like last year was just, you know, his coming out party. He was really good the year before. And Everson Griffen coming back and mentally being where he needs to be. This is a Vikings pass rush that I think could be very difficult to deal with in 2019.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that team's just getting better, you know, period. They were one of my big winners from the off season on a earlier episode that you and I did together. And let me say this, about Everson Griffen, you know, the example he set for his teammates, you know, obviously having troubles away from the field that he needed to get in order. And obviously you can't put a timetable on anything like that. So it makes it difficult on a front office to know, you know, what do we do? You know, obviously the guy's got a contract, a pretty hefty contract at the time. And, you know, Minnesota went to him and said, look, you know, We want you here, but you know, with the issues and the uncertainty, you know, we've got to make some changes to a contract here. And Everson Griffen, you know, he did it. He said, hey, I'll restructure my contract for less, you know, because I want to be part of this team and I want to continue to be here. And that's just a very good example, to a number of the players on that roster of, hey guys, you know, team first. You know, obviously these guys, you know, for a lot of these guys going after their first big contract, maybe they weren't high draft picks, you know, maybe, you know, they haven't made a ton, but you know, for a guy like Griffen, Everson Griffen, who's already gotten paid, and some of the other guys, like they've got there, like Xavier Rhodes, you know, there's some big contracts on that defense. And hey guys, if we're going to keep this unit together, A, we need everybody playing up to their contract. B, if you're not playing up to your contract, you have to make a decision whether or not you really want to be a Minnesota Viking and you're willing to restructure, or whether or not you really want to continue to get paid. And that might be, and I mentioned Xavier Rhodes, he's somebody that some think they could be having that conversation with him here in the next year or so, unless he turns his play back around. So, you know, I thought Griffen, very mature approach to his situation, a very, you know, appreciative approach when it comes to, you know, renegotiating the deal in order to stay with the team that's obviously supported him. So I really like that. And I can't say enough either about the example. I talked about the example Everson Griffin has been to some of the other players on that roster. But when you want to talk about players across this league, let me tell you, there are a variety of issues guys can have off the field. And a lot of them are ones that take time to be dealt with, whether they're substance related, whether they're mental health related, whether they're family related. You know, there are issues. And for this guy to show that, hey, guys, sometimes you just have to step away from the game. Sometimes mental health issues can be fixed, but playing football is counterproductive to it. Sometimes drug issues can be fixed, but playing football is counterproductive to it. And the same goes for the other areas as well. So very good example he set. And obviously, he's a terrific football player, and you hope that he can come back as good as he once was. Because you're right, Steve. If he comes back with that group, that defense is going to be back to the top five in the league with a mentally healthy Everson Griffin.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I guess that puts me up for my final team. And I know you still got two left, but I'll go ahead and put my finale together here. And we are going to go to the San Francisco 49ers pass rush. Look, there was no secret going in to even before San Francisco and Arizona, before the final week of the season, when we knew who was going to be picking first and who was going to be picking second, we knew San Francisco needed pass rush help. And we knew that Nick Bosa would be their guy if they got that first pick. Well, they're the second pick, and they ended up at the mercy of a division rival in Arizona. And oh my goodness, Arizona needs a pass rusher too. And early on, it almost seemed like a certainty. Oh, Bosa and Chandler Jones, what a combination that's going to be. The athleticism of Jones, the technique of Bosa, going to be a terrific combination. Well, Arizona decided that they wanted to get their quarterback that fit new coach Kingsbury's system. And you know what? I can't fault him for that. However, now they've opened up the gate for their division rival to take their biggest need and fill it with what a lot of people thought was the top player in this draft, Nick Bosa. That's exactly what San Francisco does. They bring in a technically sound football player, a guy with an NFL bloodline, a guy that knows the proper ways to go about being a professional because he's seen it in his family before. And not only that, a guy now with a big chip on his shoulder because a team that a lot of people thought he should be going to in Arizona passed on him. So you look at that, and that should be enough to tell you that, oh yeah, this pass rush, you know, they got it better. But they didn't just get it better there. No. Prior to the draft, they go out and they get D Ford from Kansas City. And I get it that Kansas City wanted to make some changes to that defense. That defense was not very good last year. And I know Kansas City Chiefs fans can still see D Ford jumping off sides in the playoffs. I understand, guys. But for crying out loud, he's coming off a season where he had 13 sacks and 7 fumbles forced. That is an incredible season for a guy. His second double-digit sack performance after getting 10 sacks 2 years ago in 2016. The year in between, he was injured, only played 6 games. But, you know, a guy with 2 double-digit sack seasons under his belt is now lining up across from a guy who many people thought was the best player in this draft. Bosa Ford, you know, the combination just gives them their starting group of ends in San Francisco, which is funny because they've already got some guys that are capable of playing defensive end there, just haven't necessarily lived up to their draft grades. And a lot of them were tweeners. When they drafted Arik Armstead, he was a defensive end at an Oregon defense that played a 3-4. So he was an interior player. However, he was on the slender side. So a team was going to have to take him, knowing that either you're going to be he's either going to be a 3-4 end, or you're going to have to put him in the 4-3 on the strong side. You're not going to expect him to give you big edge rushing sack numbers, although he can be a factor there. You know what? That hadn't all necessarily worked out to as good as they hoped with a first round pick. Come back the next year, they go right back to Oregon, go right back to the exact same kind of player, a 5 technique and a 3-4, DeForest Buckner. And last year, he came out and he had a coming out party, basically. DeForest Buckner comes out and gets 12 sacks. He leads the 49ers. And yes, once again, he's a tweener. He's a guy that can play a little bit more of an interior role, but could also be flexed out to the edge depending on matchups and who they've got across from them. And suddenly, you know, now you're looking at it and you're like, wow, San Francisco really does have a lot of options to rush the edge. It doesn't just have to be Bosa and Ford. It could very well be a guy like Bosa and Buckner. It could be Ford and Armstead. It could be any combination of the group, depending on the tackles across from you, and more importantly, who they've got at guard, who they've got on the interior, period, based on the different style of pass rushers you have. Hey, DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead have proven in their careers they can kick inside and have success. They did it in college. They've done it in the NFL. Buckner's obviously done it to a higher extent than Armstead has, but two more guys, like I say, that once again, you can kind of decide who your pair coming off the edge is going to be and maybe kick a third one inside. We haven't even talked about Solomon Thomas, another first-round pick, a top-5 pick out of Stanford a few years ago. Another guy who's a tweener. He can play on the inside. He can play on the edge. So when you look at all the potential there, and I know some of these guys haven't worked out. I get it. Maybe 49er fans are done giving Eric Armstead chances. Maybe they're done already giving Solomon Thomas a chance because he has really not looked like the player that a lot of people thought he would be coming out of Stanford. Hey, I get it. But you know what? They're continuing to put moves at the position, and defensive end is not going to be a question. And I haven't even talked about a guy like Ronald Blair, who was, I believe, second on that team in sacks last year. Yes, 5.5 sacks. Haven't even talked about him. So this team has got edge rushing options. And like I say, you know, maybe some of these guys haven't had success, but maybe now you can pick and choose when you rush them from the edge based on the matchup. I just love what they've done, and you know, it starts with the two offseason moves this offseason. Bosa, one of the top players in this draft. Ford, one of the top S Rodgers from last season. You bring those two in, you shore up those starting roles, and it makes everybody else's job on that defensive line just a little bit easier. So San Francisco is the final one I'm going to go with those edge rushers. I really expect them to make some serious improvements on that defense this year.
Yeah, you know, that was obviously, it was one of the ones, you know, I had in there. I kind of gave that spoiler a little earlier, but look, you know, you look at what they've added there. They've added Dee Ford, who last year became a premier pass rusher in this league. And then you also look at what they did adding Nick Bosa. You know, there's a lot to like there. All right, Austin. So thanks for giving us your grand finale there. You know, the last I got two more teams that I want to talk about. One of them is the Cleveland Browns and what their defensive line is going to look like. It's going to look like next year as opposed to this last year. Olivier Vernon, you know, a lot of Giants fans, you know, weren't happy with him because they wanted the Giants to generate more sacks. And of course, who do they blame it on? They blame it on Olivier Vernon. But at the end of the day, football is about these one-on-one battles. And when you look at Olivier Vernon throughout his career, he consistently wins battles. He consistently generates a lot of pressure. He's a guy that is more disruptive than what people realize. And a young guy like Myles Garrett, who started to ascend to become one of the premier edge rushers in the NFL. I think there's a lot Olivier Vernon can teach him. Now, adding Olivier Vernon there is going to also create, it's going to create more opportunities for Myles Garrett. You know, anytime you add, you add more disruptive players on the defensive line, together everyone accomplishes more as a team. That's what happens there. And I think just by adding Olivier Vernon there, you're going to see Myles Garrett probably even take another step next year. And again, Olivier Vernon, great at the point of attack, a good technician. He wins his one-on-one battles, and he consistently generates pressure. I know he's only gotten double-digit sacks at one point in his career, but we can't just look at sacks. Yes, I think, you know, we got to look at sacks to a degree, but we also got to look at how disruptive they are and how they impact the game. I'm not saying he's one of the most impactful players in the NFL, but I'm saying he does make a difference. And Myles Garrett, a guy that I think will take another step. I think Myles Garrett has the potential to be one of the best defensive ends of all time. He has that kind of upside. Larry Ogunjobi, a guy that, you know, I watched a bit of tape on last year, and a guy that I thought was another defensive lineman that they had there, a 6'3", 300-pound guy that was another good presence they had up front. And to add in Sheldon Richardson, I think playing in the Browns scheme is gonna be a good fit for Sheldon. And let's not forget this guy was Rookie of the Year a few years ago. Had some trouble off the field, but he's still a guy that, again, you pair him with these other players on this defensive line. It's gonna make them all play better. And although he's not on the defensive line, you talked about their linebackers in this front seven. Joe Sherbert, the tape that I watched of him last year playing middle linebacker, I really felt with some of the great stuff I was seeing that this guy can start to evolve into one of the really top middle linebackers in the NFL. So, you know, there's a lot to like there. The team that I'll finish up with are the Arizona Cardinals. They drafted Zach Allen out of Boston College in the third round. I thought one of the best value picks in that entire draft. When you look at Zach Allen, I think he's a guy that he knows how to get home. He is a great technician and a guy that I think is going to be someone that's going to be a double digit sack artist a number of years in this league. You combine him with getting Terrell Suggs. Terrell Suggs, he's getting close to 40, but this guy can still be a dominating presence for another year or two. And then you have Chandler Jones there. Really, I think adding Zach Allen and Terrell Suggs combined with Chandler Jones, now you actually have a formidable pass rush, which is why I think the Cardinals' defensive, their edge rushers will be an improved unit in 2019.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and we talk about, you know, just what some of these guys can bring to the table and how they can help. You talk about a guy like Zach Allen. This is a guy who could help in a variety of ways. I mean, I know he played a lot of end at Boston College. He could very well kick inside the three technique and be just as effective. This guy is a technician with his hands, and he is extremely powerful. You know, that combination can work, and especially at his size. I mean, this is a guy that weighs somewhere around the plays probably right around the 280-pound range. I know he went to the combine and weighed in at 281. I mean, he gets up to 285, even close to 290, and suddenly now, you know, that five flat 40 he ran that doesn't look good at the edge position suddenly looks pretty darn sharp at the DT position. So it's just one of those things where, you know, what he does is he brings improvement. We don't know what position it's necessarily going to be at, but we know he's going to upgrade that unit. And that's one that I'm a big fan of, was Zach Allen going to Arizona. I'm right there with you on that being one of the steals of the draft.
Yeah, because, you know, we talk about guys that can make an impact as a rookie. And you know, the guys that can typically do that are the guys that come into this league with great technique. Your Nick Bosa's, your Zach Allen's, your Chase Winovich's. These are the guys that have such good technique that I'm not going to say their game won't evolve, but their learning curve is going to be shorter than some of these other guys that are a little bit more raw. Not to say those raw guys can't come in and make an impact, but sometimes you see, you know, even like a Marcus Davenport of the Saints, you know, it might take him until the end of the year to see, oh wow, we're starting to see some of this upside there. So I really think Zach Allen could be a sleeper for defensive rookie of the year because when you watch the tape, it really is that clean. I thought he should have gone in the second round, and you know, adding Terrell Suggs, I know he's getting up there in age, but this guy is still a good football player, and what that's going to do is it's going to make Chandler Jones be able to make more of an impact, and we all know what he brings to the table. So there's a lot to like there from the Arizona Cardinals. So we're gonna stop right here, and you know, we're gonna go back really quick. And Austin, I'm gonna have you recap the teams that you thought, the defensive units you thought would make the biggest turnaround in 2019.
Well, we started with me, you know, in Washington's front seven. You know, I loved the moves they made in the offseason, getting Ioannidis back on at an affordable rate, bringing in Montez Sweat, a guy that a lot of the coaching staff and scouting department wanted to take at 15. And obviously, you know, the possibility of Reuben Foster, you know, and him getting his head screwed on straight, you know, offers, you know, that much more to that front seven. You know, I talked about the Cleveland linebackers next. Obviously, they've got guys in place. You talked about Schobert, and Christian Wilkins is another one. Those two seem to continue to put 100 tackle seasons together when they're healthy. And then Gennard Avery, a guy that really, as a fifth-round pick rookie last year, came in and offered him a little juice off the edge from the linebacker position. And then you talk about the two draft picks, Sione Takitaki and Mac Wilson. Those guys, they've put together a really strong group of linebackers there with a variety of skill sets that can really help that team moving forward. I double-dipped with Oakland, the defensive ends, you know, Furl and Max Crosby joining Arden Key at the defensive end position. There's upside in that group. There's future leadership and Furl in that group. They really did a good job of setting the core players at that position moving forward. The secondary was my next move in Oakland, you know. Once again, you know, obviously Oakland had a lot of picks, so, you know, it makes sense that they'd have an opportunity to be on this list twice. They go out and they bring out a veteran like LaMarcus Joyner. They bring in rookies like Isaiah Johnson, like Jonathan Abram, like Terrell. I'm losing some of my names here, but yeah, like Terrell, you know, the corner from Clemson. You know, these guys are all going to be able – I'm sorry, Trayvon Mullen, the corner from Clemson. I'm thinking of the current corner at Clemson, A.J. Terrell. Trayvon Mullen, the second-round pick at Clemson. These guys are all going to come in and help improve that secondary that's already got some first-round picks playing on it, and Gerrion Conley and the safety that, you know, that we're not sure if he's necessarily going to be there. But, you know, if they do decide to keep Joseph, then you know what? He can be another factor in that secondary. And then I close with the San Francisco pass rush. You bring in Nick Bosa. You bring in D Ford. Now you've got two guys set in stone that can rush the edge, and you can kind of now pick and choose. When do I want to use a Ronald Blair? When do I want to use a DeForest Buckner off the edge? When do I want to use a Solomon Thomas or an Eric Armstead off the edge? You can kind of choose when you can use those guys to ensure that they have some productivity where guys like Thomas and Armstead haven't exactly had that to this point in their careers. So, you know, just really improve their end position by shoring up the top end of it. They've had depth for plenty of years there. They've needed the impact, and that's what they got in guys like Bosa and Ford. So those were my five, and I'll let you go ahead and name your six.
All right. So I started out talking about the Philadelphia Eagles secondary. They were decimated last year, and you look at what they had last year. They had Ronald Darby, a guy that I thought was ascending to be one of the top cornerbacks in this league. Lost him early due to an injury. They lost Rodney McLeod, a guy who paired really well with Malcolm Jenkins and a player that gives them a lot of versatility in that secondary. You have an evolving Avonte Maddox, so I really like the Philadelphia Eagles secondary to be better in 2019. The New York Giants secondary was the second unit that I mentioned. And again, this list is for defensive units turning around in 2019. Sam Beal, supplemental draft pick they got in the 2018 supplemental draft. He never saw the field last year. Look, Sam Beal can mirror receivers. He can play zone. He can play man. He has the athleticism and the instincts to come in right away and make an impact. And a guy that really can be, I think, despite being a supplemental draft pick, he could be a guy that comes in and make an immediate impact for the Giants. They also added DeAndre Baker, a tough, gritty corner who can play man, play zone, has the instincts, all the things you like. And both of these guys are tough, physical, competitive corners. When you look at what they've added in their in the safety position, they did lose Landon Collins, but Jabril Peppers has a lot of upside, and I really think in the Giants scheme and James Betcher's scheme, they're gonna make good use out of his assets. So you combine that with what the Giants did in the draft, Julian Love, being really one of the best value picks I thought in the entire draft, Corey Ballantyne. This is a secondary, the New York Giants secondary, that's young and is on the rise, and I think could be one of the next really good ones in this league, especially with these young guys they've added. After that, I talked about the Vikings edge rushers. Everson Griffin coming off of a year where he dealt with a lot of demons, and Anthony Barr being a guy that's been continually ascending, and a guy that when he's asked, based on what he's asked to do and his assignments, this guy takes care of business. And again, there's a reason that despite not having a lot of production in terms of sacks, because you can't just look at stats, that Anthony Barr was highly coveted. And they're going to obviously coming back for his next season is Danielle Hunter, a guy that had true and outrageous upside that in the last few seasons we've seen him reach that potential. The Packers edge rushers, they added Preston Smith, a guy that has been consistent in terms of being able to get pressure. I mentioned as in 2017, Preston Smith had the most QB pressures. His QB pressure percentage was higher than anyone in the NFL, including Von Miller, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, some of those big names. And they added Za'Darius Smith from the Baltimore Ravens, a guy that plays with his hair on fire and plays with a lot of aggression, and someone that when I watched the tape at Baltimore, I always saw this guy popping off the screen. And then you look at the Browns defensive line. They added Olivier Vernon. They added Sheldon Richardson. Larry Ogunjobi, I thought from the tape I saw last year, impressed me. And what is that going to do? It's going to help their young defensive end, Myles Garrett. And don't get it twisted. Olivier Vernon, Sheldon Richardson, we haven't heard as much from them the last few years. But Vernon, he's consistently wins his one-on-one battles. He generates pressure. Sheldon Richardson. He was defensive rookie of the year a few years ago when he came in. He's been bounced around between a few teams, but let's not get it twisted. That same great player is still there. And then you look at the Arizona Cardinals. They're edge rushers. Chandler Jones, we all know what he brings to the table in terms of an edge rusher. The production shows up every single year consistently, but they've also added the hometown guy from Chandler, Arizona, Terrell Suggs, who's finishing his career there. A guy that, despite his age, is someone that can still cause an impact on a game. And you know, adding Zach Allen in the third round out of Boston College, you're getting an NFL-ready technician who maybe Chase Winovich and Nick Bosa, he's up there with them as one of the best pass rushing technicians coming into the draft this year. So that breaks down everything that Austin and I had. Those are the 11 defensive units that we think will be better in 2019. Join us next week, because we are going to make another episode. I don't know if it'll be our next one, but it will be coming up. We're going to talk about offensive position groups that will make a big turnaround in 2019. For Austin Smith and Steve Fishkin, a.k.a. Steve the Scout, myself, the master of disaster, the king of sting, we are signing off. This is the Pro Football Scouting Show. We'll talk to you guys next time.